All attendees must sign a medical waiver. We are not legally responsible if the ghost show scares you to death. Fall under Dr. Zomba's hypnotic spell. You'll never be the same. Win a real dead body. See Sirena's sensual Dance of the Damned, banned in 47 countries. The mutilator thirsts for blood. Will it be yours? We make contact with the dead and unleash monsters from beyond the grave. Dr. Zomba's Ghost Show of Terror.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Comedy Death Star, the podcast that digs into the dark side of comedy. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. My guest this week is writer and producer David Lucarelli. Sounds Italian.
It is.
It's totally Italian. He's here to talk about his play, Dr. Zomba's Ghost Show of Terror.
That's correct.
Zomba?
Zomba.
Zomba, okay. It's in the upcoming Hollywood Fringe Festival, which is June 2018. We're going to chat about that and more in a moment. But first, a message from our corporate overlords. Comedy Death Star is a production of Actors Comedy Studio and ACSDigital.tv. I'm Denzel Myers. My guest today is ghost writer and producer David Lucarelli. Hello.
Hello, sir.
I just added the ghostwriter, but
quote-unquote ghostwriter. I've actually never ghostwritten anything.
You have not?
No.
So you've always gotten credit?
I have.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, you know, my first question, I want to know about Dr. Zomba's Ghost Show of Terror.
Yeah, well, yeah. First let me tell you a little background about what a ghost show is, because I sort of feel people don't necessarily know. Okay, starting around the 1950s, that was really the heyday of them. It was before they were putting on haunted houses for Halloween.
Okay.
They would four-wall a theater, usually a movie theater. There would be a touring troupe, and they would rent it out for a midnight ghost show. And that would be kind of a spooky, funny, scary magic show that would feature hypnotism and mind reading and monsters and ghosts. The climax of every ghost show would be what they call a blackout sequence, in which the audience is in total darkness and then surrounded by supernatural phenomena that they can hear and see and feel. It's kind of a lost art, but we went back, we studied the ghost show manuals from the 1950s.
They had manuals
because it became a franchise. It was a very popular thing.
So like a McDonald's thing, like you two can have a ghost show.
You two can have your own ghost show.
We'll set you up and, you know, okay. So yeah, that sounds cool.
Yeah, then we came up with a few tricks of our own. My day job is I'm an audio engineer, and I don't want to give away all of our secrets, but I will say that there are certain low frequencies that have been shown to instill fear in humans.
Really?
So that's for starters.
Now, just since you mentioned that, what about the low frequencies that are shown to induce bowel movements in humans? Those also exist, right?
Well, we won't be using those.
But they do exist. I'm just asking because I'm a duffer in the audio realm, and I've heard that this is true, but I don't really...
Yeah, I think that does sound familiar.
Don't play COVID. You use it on your kid.
No, nothing like that. So anyhow, we went and we studied the ghost show manuals, came up with some tricks of our own, and we're bringing it back to Hollywood for five shows this June as part of the Fringe Fest.
Before we go any further, it's at the Flight Theater at the Complex in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And the address is 6472 Santa Monica Boulevard.
Correct.
That's all right. I wrote that down. I got it from you. So it's
okay.
You're checking your thing. I'm checking my thing that comes from your thing.
Yes.
And the tickets are on sale now, the month of May.
That is correct.
For the Fringe in June.
Yeah, tickets just went on sale a few days ago. For anybody that's part of the Fringe Fest, the tickets are $5 each. For anybody that's a volunteer for the Fringe Fest, the tickets are free. And then for anybody that's not affiliated with the Fringe Fest, tickets are $15, but you can save $3 by using discount code Facebook.
Facebook.
Yes.
Discount code Facebook. Okay, I'm going to write that down because, well, when I promote the show, do you want me to put that in the
Sure, absolutely.
All right. Code. And then how do I get the $5 thing? Because I have a show. How do I know? How does that work?
You are logged into the HollywoodFringe.org website and you have your own show, it will automatically lower the ticket price for you to $5.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Because I was kind of wondering, there's a bunch of things I want to see.
Yeah.
But, I can't be spending $15 to see like 30 shows of friends and people and stuff.
Exactly. That's why they do it.
Now, there's one other thing that I saw in your promotional material that I got to ask about.
Sure.
One lucky member from each show will win a real dead body.
That is correct. Yes, that was a staple of the ghost shows from the 1950s. That was one thing that they almost always did. And to find out exactly what that means, you got to show up to the show.
Show up at the show. Now, how come I've never heard of these ghost show things, franchise from the 1950s. I mean, we had a lot of horror movies and crazy stuff going on. How come I've never heard of this?
Well, like I said, the heyday was the 1950s. There were a few that limped along into the early 70s. And then there's a few sporadically that are still put on around the United States here and there. But most people don't know about them. I only know about them because I stumbled upon a really cool book called Ghost Masters, written by Mark Walker at Comic-Con one year. And unfortunately, it's out of print. You can still find it on Amazon, but you got to pay an arm and a leg for it. But it really is.
I see what you did there, an arm
and a leg. Yeah, you got that. Thank you. It's the definitive book about the history of ghost shows. And if you can find it, it's a great read.
Yeah. Now, I was concerned, kind of, that this is going to be too scary for me.
Yeah.
Like, I think I mentioned Count Chocula and Frankenberry were a little scary.
That put you on the edge, yeah.
When I was a kid, I can probably deal with them now.
Sure.
You know, on a scale of like 1 to 5, how scary, how funny? What are we talking about?
Okay, so most of the ghost show is played for laughs.
Yes.
Most. There is a 2-minute blackout sequence at the end. Yeah. So if you are terrified of the dark, probably not the show for you.
Okay.
We're recommending ages 9+.
Okay.
And I don't know your age exactly, sir, but you do seem like you're north of 9+.
Yeah, I'm over 9.
Yeah. So it might be okay for you.
Okay. All right. That's good. And what made you want to do this, a revival like this?
Yeah. Well, much like the people that this show is for, I am a huge Halloween fan. I love haunted houses. I'm a monster kid who grew up with TV horror hosts and famous monsters of filmland. And after reading this book, Ghostmasters, I thought to myself, man, I'd really like to see a ghost show, but nobody was doing them. So I thought, well, I guess the only way I'm going to see one is if I make my own.
Is to do it yourself.
Yeah.
Now, did you have some kind of formative childhood experience that you were scared or something that really, what set you on this path of, it's comedy, horror.
They're right.
Very related genres. People think that maybe they're totally separate, but they have a lot in common.
Right.
What set you on this path of being a creepy guy lurking in the shadows?
Sure. I think there is a relationship between horror and comedy, right? Because they're both about visceral, uncontrolled reactions and responses. I don't know. I think Scooby-Doo was probably the gateway drug. I'm old enough to remember the live-action TV show of Ghostbusters that had Larry Storch from F Troop, and
I don't remember seeing that.
Yeah, that's relatively obscure, but if you use the Google, you can find it.
Where did you grow up?
In Pittsburgh.
I was going to say Pennsylvania. I don't know why.
Right.
Pittsburgh. I grew up in Philadelphia.
Oh, okay.
But I don't remember seeing that. When was that?
That would have been in the early to mid 70s.
Huh.
Yeah.
All right.
But Pittsburgh also had a couple horror TV show hosts, had Scorpio and Chili Billy and Home of George Romero. So,
yes, totally.
I'm a huge fan of his. Got to support the home team.
Yes.
And, from an early age, my dad, I think my dad took me to my first haunted house when I was in second grade. I remember I watched Halloween for the first time in the summer of second grade. My cousins had cable out in the suburbs and
with Mike Myers,
and I was way too young to see that movie in second grade.
It's still scary.
It kind of scarred me for life, but
you're still getting over it.
I'm still getting over it, working it out.
All right, now you also wrote you're the author of the Children's Vampire Hunting Brigade trilogy of graphic novels.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that, children vampire hunting.
Right.
Some people might not think those things go together.
That's true. Yeah. So that, we just finished up our Kickstarter for that, which was successfully funded. We raised north of $5,000 for volume 3, and with 120 backers, and unlocked all our stretch goals. So I'm real happy about that. The origin of the Children's Vampire Hunting Brigade is that it was inspired by something called the Gorbals Vampire Incident. So in real life in Scotland in the 1950s, hundreds of school kids went looking for a vampire in the Southern Necropolis graveyard over several nights. They were looking for a 7-foot-tall vampire with iron teeth that they thought had killed a couple of local kids. It was considered mass hysteria at the time. It was blamed on comic books. And in fact, recently a comic book has surfaced from that period. The modern consensus is that what probably happened is that comic book called The Vampire with Iron Teeth got conflated with an urban legend about kind of a boogeyman called the Iron Man of the Gorbals, who was said to frequent that cemetery and was used as kind of a way for parents to try to get their kids not to hang out there after school because it was home to a bunch of vagrants and derelicts. Also, another influence.
So there was a real comic book at the time.
Yes.
And also a local legend.
Right.
And some kids went missing.
Well, no kids actually went missing, right? They investigated that aspect of it.
But at the time, did they believe that?
The kids believed that, yes. Now, where the kids got the information that two kids were missing, that is still a bit vague.
Don't know. But the kids went hunting.
Yes.
No parents did.
No, it was kids. The youngest one was 4 years old.
Several nights in a row.
They tried to disband them. It actually took the principal of a local school eventually got them all to go home. But yeah, they took steak knives and sticks and torches hunting for this vampire. It probably also didn't hurt that there was a steel mill right next to the cemetery that was going all night belching forth red fire and smoke, and that made it a little more atmospheric.
Yeah, that was good.
But yeah.
It's really kind of an incredible thing that there are a bunch of kids that were so upset about something that they thought happened that they went vigilante.
Exactly.
And they were really ready to kill something.
That's right.
And
yes.
The parents all said no or whatever, and the kids were out there several nights in a row. That's really a fascinating thing. Mass hysteria.
It is, and you know, it's interesting when sociologists went to look for some of the people that participated in this because they were doing responses. They heard from some of them. They also heard from other generations of monster hunters from the Gorbals who had gone on monster hunts for Spring-Heeled Jack, generic ghosts and banshees, and the White Lady and other characters like that. So for whatever reason, the Gorbal seems to have a multi-generational history of kids going on these monster hunts. I kind of think the modern day equivalent to it is probably the Slender Man on the internet, you know. Whenever
Slender Man, I'm not familiar with.
Oh, you're not familiar? Okay, so there's an urban legend about the Slender Man. It's called a creepypasta if you look it up.
Creepypasta?
Yeah, so you're not familiar with that? Okay.
This is all news to me. All I get from my friends is like when there's a clown that's hanging around in a mall, they're scaring people.
Right.
They send it to me and say, is this you? Is this you? And it's never me.
And you never admit to it, sure.
Well.
Yeah. So basically, yes, if you go down the rabbit hole of the internet and you look, and you Google Slender Man and Creepypasta, there was actually a real murder trial. I shouldn't make total light of it because there were a couple of young girls that actually killed somebody in the name of Slender Man. So that's pretty dark and serious. But for the most part,
It's dark, serious, and hilarious. I mean, that people are killing people based on conjecture.
Based on urban legends. The whole idea of creepypastas is that kids make up their own urban legends and then try to convince people that they're real. And Slender Man is one that has kind of taken on a life of its own. But the relationship between that and the Gorbals vampire is really, you know, the youth needs like an open space away from the prying eyes of adulthood to confront their fears, right? And in the 1950s, that was the Southern Necropolis Cemetery. Today, it's probably the internet.
Well, now you said, now this got deep.
It got deep.
Serious.
Sorry, I'm kind of a deep guy.
No, that's good. I don't mind that.
All right. So the actual...
I'm interested in this now. That there's a psychological theory that young people need to confront fears.
Sure.
Whatever those fears are.
Yeah.
Unknown, growing up, and that they need places to do it that are independent of their parents and the adult world.
Correct.
And today you think that's the internet. How does that show up in the internet today? Through this kind of hoaxes and...
Yeah, exactly. Through them making up their own spooky stories and urban legends. And, you know, now the actual comic book has been described as kind of like a punk rock Buffy set in Scotland. You know, I was lucky enough, I got invited after I put out the first two volumes through Creator's Edge Press. I was a guest of Glasgow Comic Con, so I got to go to Scotland and get my own private tour of the cemetery and do research, you know, go to castles and ruins and underground tunnels. And so volume three, All Souls Day, is really probably the most authentic volume because I actually met a lot of fantastic Scottish people, at least one of which ended up as a character in All Souls Day, and got to actually see a lot of the places that All Souls Day takes place in.
Wow. So you write the stuff, you don't draw it.
I do not draw it. The artist is Henry Ponciano, and we've been working together for about 5 years. He's a Filipino artist. We've never met. He actually has a brother in Long Beach, though, so I'm trying to convince him to come out for WonderCon next year.
Okay.
But yeah, the other book that we do, you can't really get The Brigade right now because the Kickstarter just ended. So
I'm sorry, you must have taken a lot of photos when you were in Scotland.
Oh, I took a ton.
And to send him so he
Yes, lots of photo references.
What's going on.
Exactly. But the other book that we do together that you can get right now is called Tinseltown. And that is a period crime drama about one of the first female police officers in Hollywood. So it's set in 1915. It's kind of like Boardwalk Empire meets L.A. Confidential. And that comes out from Alterna Comics. It's in your local comic book shop right now. If they're sold out or they didn't order it, you can get it from alternacomics.com.
Spell Alterna.
A-L-T-E. E-R-N-A
right.
Comics.
Comics.com.
Yeah, okay. And it's part of the newsprint editions that they do, so it's only $1.50 each. 5-issue limited series that comes out bi-monthly.
And this is also based on true story.
Well, it's inspired by historical circumstances.
Yeah.
Basically, in the 1915, Universal Studios was kind of a proto-feminist place because they had a female mayor, they had a female police chief, they had female police officers. They kind of saw themselves as a semi-autonomous city run apart from Los Angeles. However, they were not above exploiting those officers by marching them in short skirts and parades and things like that, a la the Siegfried Field Follies.
Oh, it's good to know we didn't just invent that kind of crap recently.
No.
It's been going on for a long time.
It has, unfortunately. And in real life, my mother was a police officer for the Pittsburgh Police for 20-plus years, so this book is also sort of my tribute to her.
Yeah. Now, does Pittsburgh have its own kind of creepy local legend? Because, like I said, I'm from Philadelphia.
Oh, it sure does. It sure does.
I was in elementary school in South Jersey, and we had the Jersey Devil.
Okay.
Which was supposedly a kid who was abandoned in the Pine Barrens of South Jersey and grew up as a feral child.
Yeah.
And even though you don't know, even though you know it's not true,
right.
Especially when you're in like 5th grade, 6th grade, 7th grade, in the fall when it starts to get dark early and you're on your paper route and it's like 4:45 and it's getting dark.
Yeah.
You start thinking about the Jersey Devil. What did Pittsburgh have?
Yeah, that reminds me of a great quote by someone unknown where they say, you know, by day I don't believe in ghosts, by night I'm a little bit more open-minded. So Pittsburgh,
you can't help it.
Yeah, you can't. Now, was there any place that you could go to? Did you ever go searching for the Jersey Devil?
Well, the Pine Barrens is a big pine forest area in South Jersey, and because there's a lot of pine there and cedar trees, there's not a lot of brush.
You know, okay.
Needles, so it's very specific kind of big area. So when you get close to those areas, you know that you're close to them. We never went searching. But,
okay.
It was always close enough that he could come out.
He could come to you.
He could come to our neighborhood. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, in Pittsburgh we had something called the Green Man, right?
Yeah.
And the legend of the Green Man was supposed to be that there was a steel worker who was involved in some accident where his face slid off and he turned green. And there was a way that you could go looking for the Green Man, actually. So this ties into, there are two urban legends this sort of ties into. Okay, so to get to where the Green Man was supposed to be, you had to go through this thing that was nicknamed Cadillac Tunnel. And Cadillac Tunnel was a tunnel that was kind of on a hairpin turn, two lanes going in and two lanes going out. But the actual tunnel itself is only one car length wide. So you're supposed to stop your car at the entrance of the tunnel and honk your horn and wait. And if you don't hear a response, then you go through the tunnel.
There's a curve,
yeah, right. Okay. So if you start in the tunnel and unfortunately another car is coming, you're going to have a head-on collision. And the urban legend about that tunnel is that supposedly in the 1950s on prom night, there were a couple of Cadillacs that, they were drinking and they didn't stop and there was a head-on collision and everybody died. So you have to go through that tunnel to get to where the Green Man's supposed to be. And there's a spot out in the, woods of western Pennsylvania where there's kind of a man-made cave. And if you see that cave from a distance, the light does look green surrounding it. And the reason the light looks green is because there are mounds of rock salt in the cave, and there's a hole in the top of the cave where when the moonlight shines down, it reflects off the rock salt and looks kind of green. So of course it's an area we went there, and lots of drunk teenagers go there to check it out. The one thing that we can explain that's sort of disturbing about it is that there are also cages in that man-made cave that are human size. So we thought that was a little strange.
This is the thing. With all of these kind of legends or where you say, oh, yeah, of course, that's not true.
Right.
Most of the time, there is still one little bit that is an unexplained phenomenon.
There is. There's always something that you can't quite explain.
Pin it down.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
And that's why we have these kind of stories.
That's right. That's right.
You wanted to do one more thing about Dr. Zomba's Ghost Show of Terror.
Sure.
Which is to give away some tickets if we have some kind of contest or how are we going to give away a ticket?
Well, let's see. I guess the easiest way to do this, our first preview show is Saturday, June 2nd at 10:45 p.m. So why don't we give away a pair of tickets to the first person that sends me an email at, my email just a little long here, but it's DLUCARELLI at earthlink.net. So one more time, that's DLUCARELLI at earthlink.net.
All right, so if you send David an email, you could, if you're the first person that does this,
yes,
you're going to get two tickets to the first show, preview show, which is Saturday, June, what's the date?
June 2nd.
June 2nd, and the show is at 10:30 p.m.?
10:45. It's about a 40-minute show.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
All right, so, keep those cards and letters coming.
Yeah.
And, this is going to be on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so everybody should...
Yeah, you can like Dr. Zomba's Ghost Show on Facebook. And I'm not done talking about the ghost show. I still got a few more things to tell you about.
That's why before we moved on, I wanted to just get... Because we went all around.
We went off on lots of tangents.
Yeah, let's... One more plug for Dr. Zomba.
Yeah.
Who is Dr. Zomba?
Well, Dr. Zomba is played by a guy who's a magician, actor, comedian named David M. Beach. And the cool thing about David, we're really lucky to have him as the star of the show. One of the best ghost shows from the 1950s was Dr. Silkini's Ghost Show. A few years ago, the company that owned the rights to Dr. Silkini set out searching for the guy that was going to be the handpicked successor and assume the mantle of being the new Dr. Silkini. Well, that show didn't end up happening, but the guy that they chose to be the new Dr. Silkini was David M. Beach. So we're very, very lucky to have him.
So he's been repurposed.
He has been repurposed. He's no longer, yes, now he is Dr. Zomba. As a character, Dr. Zomba is a hypnotist, a head shrinker who has taken over the ghost show. I should mention maybe that it is a ghost show. It is also a play about a ghost show. So there is kind of a plot to it.
So is it a show inside of a play or a play inside of a show?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure. I'll have to get back to you on that.
I like that these guys are always doctors. They're always mad doctors. They have a They have scientific knowledge. They're on a quest somehow to do something that really kind of shouldn't be done.
Right. Well, I think it's natural that we have an inbuilt fear of doctors, right? Because they are people that we very frequently place a lot of trust in. Like if you go in for an operation, you know, you are basically putting your body and potentially your entire life on the line on handing it over to a total stranger, right?
And you're unconscious. You have one of those hospital gowns that doesn't have anything in the back.
Yeah, yeah. You know, put that all together and let your imagination run wild.
All right. Are we, anything else about this? We're going to move on. I got a bunch
We can move on.
I got a bunch of other things.
Yeah, I think I've said all I need to say.
All right. Yeah. Come and see the show once again, Dr. Zomba's Ghost Show of Terror, the Flight Theater at the Complex Hollywood, 6472 Santa Monica Boulevard. First show is Saturday, June 2nd at 10:45 p.m. There are four more shows throughout the month of June.
Yeah, basically it's a late night Saturday show. It moves around time-wise, but it's always the last show between 10:45 and midnight, basically.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
And then there's one Pay What You Can Monday show that's at 10:45 as well for people that can't make Saturdays.
All right, well, there's plenty of places, plenty of times to go see it. Okay. How old were you when you first ran away from home?
I did run away from home, actually, as a matter of fact. How did you know that? good.
I'm the host of the show, David.
Okay, I guess you did your research.
Supernatural powers.
Nice. How old was I? I want to say I was... Unfortunately, I was younger than my son is now, which is a little scary because I don't ever want my son to do that to me. But I will say this. I was the child of broken home. So by the time I was my son's age, my parents had actually been separated for about 3 years. And I think when that happens, you know, there's a certain time when you start to realize. As you say, hey, you know, maybe I don't need my parents anymore. I could just go off and live my life on my own. And eventually that's true, but probably not when you're in second grade.
So this moment, you're finally answering, you were in second grade.
Yes, I think I was about that age, yeah.
And did you get anywhere? Or, you know, do you remember what initiated this running away business?
I think it was just an idea that my cousin and I had, and it was one of those things where you dare, one dares the other, and like, no, let's really do this. Okay, I'll do it if you'll do it. And then, you know, I think we got as far as leaving the one house on walking to my other parents' house and getting some food and supplies to go off. And I think at that point, we probably realized that this was getting a lot more real than we ever intended it to. And we made a phone call. And of course, our parents were mortified. Kids, don't ever run away from home. You'll give your parents a heart attack.
So they didn't know until you called them.
Yeah, we were probably missing for a couple hours there. Yeah.
Okay. All right. When you were a child, you had an imaginary friend.
No, I didn't. I had a security blanket like Linus, but it was not actually, you know, he didn't have a personality or anything like that.
No. Do you have a name for the security blanket?
No name.
And how old were you when you finally were convinced? Did you get rid of him willingly, or was...
It was like last week, I think, yeah.
Clawed from the grasp.
I think it fell apart. It just turned into, it disintegrated eventually. Yeah.
Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. I understand. Now, every show I have a special question.
Okay.
And it's a sponsored question. I have a different sponsor every week. And
right.
This week, amazing, the question is sponsored by a restaurant called Cowfish Sushi Burger Bar.
Ooh, okay.
So sound good? Cowfish Sushi Burger.
Okay.
Now, it's in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Wow, all right.
And they recently opened a new location in the Universal City Walk of Orlando, Florida.
Okay.
And the thing that is a little weird about this is that the chef and mastermind behind Cowfish Sushi Burger, his name is David Lucarelli.
Really?
It's not you.
Yeah, that's what an amazing coincidence.
It's an amazing coincidence. I'm just going to read the promo thing. It says, dive into a custom-designed burger or saddle up to some sushi. You can keep them separate or embrace the spirit of Berg Sushi. It's a registered trademark there.
Yeah.
Sushi. A cutting-edge fusion of sandwiches made with sushi stuff and sushi built with burger stuff.
Okay.
Sip on spiked milkshakes, premium sakes, beers and exotic martinis.
Wow.
Sounds weird, right?
Well, you know, I love sushi and I love a good burger. I don't know that the two should ever meet, but I'm open to the possibility.
Well, that's why Mr. David Chef Lucarelli, I guess people say, I love sushi, I love a burger. You know, kind of like you got your chocolate and my peanut butter.
Right,
I mean,
right.
That's what innovation is. Two things that we didn't think would go together.
Like Roscoe's chicken and waffles?
And then you find out they go together and ba-boom.
Yeah.
Nothing new under the sun, so we're just mixing and mashing.
Sure.
All the time. All right. So, Cowfish Sushi Burger in Charlotte, North Carolina, or Universal City Walk, Orlando, Florida. Now, here's the question.
Okay.
I decided 20-something years ago to do something different, to really contribute to the world, which was to give permission to some family and friends to hit me in the face with a pie or squirt seltzer anytime.
Okay.
Now, usually when you throw a pie at somebody, it's angry or you don't like them.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to change that. And by giving permission, these people can now, friends and family, mm-hmm. throw it with love. I could receive it with love. And they get to do something that normally is forbidden.
Sure.
So it's been a big hit, and I've been hit in the face with pies a lot of times.
Okay.
So the question is this. You're going to do this. You're going to give one person permission to hit you in the face with a pie, living, dead, real, imaginary. Who would you like to receive a pie from?
Wow. Who would I like to receive a pie from? Okay. I think I got to go with Lon Chaney.
Lon Chaney.
The man of a thousand faces.
Man of a thousand faces.
Because, you know, he's a guy whose work I've admired and has been a big influence. And if he's going to mess my face up with a pie, it seems only fair.
Yeah. And so what do you imagine? You know, where might this happen? How would that be with you and Lon? Since it's not angry. It's a
yeah, thing. Right. It's, you know, I imagine it is me at Universal Studios on the still-preserved set of Phantom of the Opera, and I'm there late at night after everybody's gone home, and, you know, maybe it's his ghost, and I'm just kind of walking down there, and suddenly I've got the taste of custard in my mouth and whipped cream stinging my eyes, and I say, thank you, Mr. Chaney. May I have another?
And does he say anything, or, you know?
He just says, you know, can I get two free tickets to the ghost show, is what he says.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to give you a card.
Sure.
Pie yourself free.
Okay.
On the back it says, it's always okay to hit me in the face with a pie or squirt seltzer anytime without warning.
Okay.
Pass this card along to friends and family. Experience the sublime service in receiving a pie with love and joy in your heart.
Wow.
And you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. But here's the card. It's, on the front is a picture of the Soupy Sales star.
Yes.
On the Hollywood Walk of Fame. It's got a pie on it.
I see that.
If you'd like to give this card to anyone.
Okay.
You know, feel free. And if it happens, you know, if you get hit.
Yeah.
You know, let me know what happens. Because Lon Chaney.
Yeah.
That sounds good. You have a somewhat quirky sleeping or bedtime ritual.
I do?
What is it?
I don't know. You tell me. What?
Confess. Okay, we're all friends here.
Okay.
Nobody listens to this show.
Oh, great, great. My sleepy, quirky bedtime ritual is just probably not sleeping. I'm a terrible, terrible sleeper.
All right.
Have been all my life.
Nightmares?
No, not nightmares. Just can't turn the old brain off. You know, I'm constantly got stuff clicking up there, so.
I like better that you're haunted.
Okay, well, if it makes you feel better to think I'm haunted, you go right ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine you laying in the dark and hearing the kind of branches brush against the screen.
Yes, tossing and turning. And
dog barks. You mm-hmm. know,
wind howls.
Floor creaky.
Sure.
You know, you're not sure. Maybe if you're guilty about something, kind of an Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah, I see where you're going.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not just like, oh, I'm scared there might be somebody out there, but maybe you've done something.
Yeah, well.
The past that haunts you still.
I actually have very few regrets, but maybe subconsciously. You never know.
Well, that's what subconsciously would be all about.
Yes.
Now, the last thing I like to do on this show.
Sure.
I'm not sure if anyone else likes it, but I like it, is I like to anagram.
Okay.
Which is you take the letters of a word or phrase.
Yes.
And you use all of them, you rearrange them.
Okay.
And you get some new word or phrase. And sometimes it's illuminating.
Yes.
Not always, but sometimes it is. So,
did you do an anagram?
I did a couple of anagrams.
Okay.
And sometimes I don't know if they're useful, but you figure out, oh, yeah, that makes perfect sense. So, for example,
yes.
I anagrammed Dr. Zomba.
Yes.
And read what that first one is.
Okay. To do mob czar. Czar as in czar. To do mob czar.
Yeah. So I thought, early days of the Russian Revolution, this could be on Lenin's to-do list.
It could be.
Mob the czar.
To become a mob czar. Or, yeah, the king of the mob.
You see it as king of the mob. I thought it meant the czar was there. We're going to mob him.
Oh, no. I was thinking more like, the head gangster. Head Russian gangster.
I understand.
Yeah.
But the question is there any connective tissue between Dr. Zomba and to-do, mob czar?
Well, in a way there is, because Dr. Zomba basically becomes the head ringmaster of the ghost show through some very nefarious means. Spoiler alert, you'll have to come to the show. To find out exactly how he did that, you got to come see the ghost show.
All right, so see, there you go. That's the game. We found some connective tissue.
Yeah.
And to me, there are secret meanings.
Yeah.
And this is a way to perhaps bring...
There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophies.
That's exactly right. That's Hamlet, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I also anagrammed this ghost show of terror.
Right.
And here's what this one.
Okay. Forgo short throws.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're only going deep. We're going long.
We're going deep. We're going long.
Anything that makes sense to you?
It kind of does, because when we are right in the midst of making all of the props and everything for the ghost show right now and figuring out exactly what the magic tricks are going to be. It's about a 49-seat theater. So now most shows for the Fringe, they've got 15 minutes to set up, 15 minutes to tear down. We've got a half an hour to set up because we know we've got a lot of moving parts and a lot of extra stuff to put together to make the show everything it can be. And I think if that was a message to me, it would be to make sure that everything we're putting together plays to the 49th seat in the back of the theater. No short throws, only long ones.
All right, so if you're like Gallagher, if you're going to hit a watermelon with a sledgehammer, it's got to go all the way.
The juice has to go to the last row.
Go to the last row. Okay, forego short throws, ghost show of terror. All right, here's another one.
Sure.
This is a fun game. You're great at it. Anagrammed cowfish sushi burger.
Right.
And one of the things it is, here, read this one.
Okay. Fibrous chug swisher.
Mm. I think I picked that one just because I liked it. It sounded weird. Does it mean anything to you?
Wow.
Fibrous
chug swisher. I picture when I read... When I read that, I picture somebody putting hamburger meat and sushi fish guts into a blender and then serving that up in a martini glass and going, here you are. But I'm thinking that's probably not what the other David Lucarelli has in mind at his restaurant.
We don't know.
We don't know.
We're going to have to go there. And so I like what you're saying. You're putting burger stuff and sushi stuff in a blender.
Yeah.
With a little ginger. That could be the fibrous part.
Sure.
And you put it on frappe.
Uh-huh.
And you put it in a martini glass. I think that's right. And what kind of garnish, though?
What kind of garnish? I don't know. Maybe a little cilantro, I'm thinking.
And a radish, one of those.
Yeah, sure.
I want it to look a little bloody somehow.
Okay.
Cowfish sushi burger also anagrams to this.
Hue hibiscus for rugs.
Now, I know that you can make tea out of hibiscus.
That's true.
It might be a very woody, fibrous plant that is also good for rugs. Do you know?
I am not an expert on either hibiscus tea or rug manufacturing, but I certainly have no knowledge that can contradict your theory.
All right. Well, if anybody out there in radio land, interwebs land, has any information if hibiscus can be used for rugs, we should probably do that and try to sell it to David Lucarelli at his place.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Now, here's the last thing. I anagrammed your name.
Uh-oh. Okay.
And a bunch of weird things came up that may or may not make any sense.
Okay.
One is, let's just skip that one.
Okay.
Now, how about this one?
Dull Caviar Deli.
Yeah. Are you a caviar fan?
I don't believe that I have... I have had like fish egg sushi, which is kind of tangentially related to sushi or to caviar.
Oh, it's the same thing. It's just like a certain, you know.
Yeah, different type of fish egg.
Yeah.
I don't think I've actually had actual caviar. Dull Caviar Deli. Wow. I'm not a huge fan of delis, I got to say. So maybe.
Or caviar.
Yeah.
So that sounds right.
Dull yeah, that
caviar
does.
Or deli.
I like my meat hot. I'm not so much the cold meat guy.
I just see like a big pile of 3-day-old caviar. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that would be...
it's supposed to be like...
Less than resplendent.
Glistening and
it's know, lost its sheen.
Yeah, yeah, it's lost its sheen.
Sure.
And it's definitely different than the other... The next answer, which is...
Lucid Larva Deli.
Now that sounds good.
Yeah.
Lucid Larva.
Yeah, where the larva itself has become conscious
sentient.
And sentient
yeah.
And has decided, you know, because of that to run their own deli. Right?
So you see the larva is running the deli because they're lucid.
Right. I mean, once you become lucid, you start thinking, well, I'm in a capitalistic country. I got to make a buck.
Yeah, and you can't, not all larva can be in the pants business, so some of them got to run a deli.
Right, or carpet manufacturing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you got to branch out.
Exactly.
All right, so Lucid Larva Deli.
Yeah.
Now I see this big larva behind the...
behind the counter.
Behind the counter with an apron.
Yeah.
One of those little white hats.
Sure.
He's like, what do you have, pal? Yeah.
Right.
Next.
Uh-huh.
All right. Now this one, I'm sorry, I just met you. I'm not sure what people say about you.
Yeah.
But David Lucarelli.
A dull, virile cad.
Does that fit you? A dull, virile cad? Anybody ever called you that?
I like to think that back in my prime women-loving days,
yes.
As a single man, I was perhaps a virile cad, and that razor's edge has probably been dulled a little bit by 10 years of being married to the most wonderful woman in the world. So, I think that sums me up.
Okay, a dull... Well, okay. It could also be our current president, a dull, virile cad.
I'm not sure how virile he is, but yeah.
Well, he seems to get around.
A dull cad, definitely.
Yeah, he seems to get around a little bit, so okay. All right, well, you've been married for 10 years.
Coming up on 10 years,
now.
Yeah.
Good for you. Way to go. First and only time being married?
First and only time. Yep. I have no complaints.
No, good. You shouldn't. That's exactly what you should say when you're on the radio.
Right.
All right. Well, I think we're going to run out of time any moment now. I should probably end the show. I would like to thank my guest, David Lucarelli, for coming in this week. Once again, go to see his play, Dr. Zomba's Ghost Show of Terror. First show is June 2nd. Did I get that right? June 2nd, June 3rd. Okay. At the Flight Theater at the Complex Hollywood, part of the Hollywood Fringe Festival, June 2018. Tickets are on sale now at hollywoodfringe.org.
Correct.
If you would like to buy a Comedy Death Star hashtag coffee mug, not bad, right?
Looks great.
Email me at comedydeathstar@acsdigital.tv. You know, I've never received an email at that address.
Not yet.
Just test ones from my other email addresses.
Ah.
I've sold a couple of these coffee mugs. One of my guests came on, and then I ordered 10 of them. I think he thought he would send them to his friends and family for, a holiday thing.
Sure, sure.
I'm not sure if they appreciated that, but now there's more out there.
Well, it's a handsome mug.
It's handsome. Yeah, thank you. Our theme music was written and performed by Dean Mermel. Heck of a guy. You have been listening to Comedy Death Star, the official podcast of Actors Comedy Studio, right here in Hollywood, USA. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Thanks for listening. We will be back sooner than next week.
Wow.